because I am Tolkien!
Hello. I'm the Doctor.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Bad Wolf Radio, a discussion and review podcast all about Doctor Who. I'm one of your hosts, Aaron Goins, and I'm here with the man who is already calculating how much it would cost to buy every episode on iTunes, Adam Farmer.
Yes, that is true. And I've come to a horrible realization that Eccleston is not present on iTunes, limited tenant episodes on iTunes. And I'm pretty much already set with Matt Smith on forward. So I am not entirely sure how in the world I'm going to find those Eccleston episodes.
Oh, this is news to me. So the entire modern series is not available on iTunes?
Yeah, believe it or not, the entire modern series is not available on iTunes. So looking at the list right now, we have... It just disappeared on me. So we have, I believe, two or three episodes from season two. Let me pull it up just to be sure. So we have two episodes from season two, and they are Doomsday in the Satan Pit. We have two episodes from season three, Blink in the Shakespeare Code. Then it looks like we have just about the entire season four. And then from that point forward, everything is exactly what you'd expect it to be, full seasons. So yeah, we're missing all of one. We have two episodes of two, two episodes of three, I believe a full season for episode four, and then everything from that point forward.
And the reason we're talking about this, and I'm pretty sure most of our listeners are aware of this, but if you're not aware, the way that many of us watch Doctor Who is through Netflix or through Hulu. But Doctor Who has now been pulled off of both of those streaming services. So there's
it was a dagger to the heart.
There's currently nowhere, at least for us U.S. viewers, I don't know if this is the same across, you know, other territories, but for the U.S., we have no way of streaming Doctor Who right now.
The U.K. does have it on Netflix, but they are going to be losing it here soon as well.
So that's pretty big. That's pretty big news. I know it's happened before where Netflix dropped Doctor Who for, I think, like a week.
Yeah.
Or something. And then it always came right back. But it doesn't look like right now it's coming back anytime soon. Which is, you know, for people like me and you, and I think probably a lot of our listeners, you know, you like to just from time to time pull up Netflix, you know, get nostalgic, find an episode that you really like, you know, go back and watch something. And now we just don't have that same ability. I mean, you know, there's other ways of getting the episodes. You can purchase them on iTunes, like we were just talking about, or, you know, find the full set, you know, Blu-rays, you know, that kind of stuff. But it's a little less convenient than it used to be to just sit down and watch Doctor Who.
Yeah. And not only that, but it definitely gets a lot worse in that Hulu Plus has lost all classic episodes of Doctor Who as well. So it's not only new Who that took the hit, but it's all the classics that have gone away along with it,
which does directly affect us, not just our fandom but our show.
Yeah,
you know, that's kind of what we did
right there.
You know, we like to review the current series as it comes out, but in the off season we went back and reviewed the classic, and now, you know, and we'll get to the other news because there's actually a lot of news going on right now with Doctor Who, but we have not only one off season, it's like we have two off seasons coming up that we have to, you know, figure out what we're going to do with Bad Wolf Radio. I think, you know, we'll figure something out. I don't think we're going to just go off the air for a couple years, but, you know, it definitely makes things a little bit more challenging.
Yeah, we'll be around. And I mean, Amazon has us covered. They have pretty much all of New Who, and they have quite a bit of classics. It's just going to be a pay to play type of system. No subscription here. We're gonna have to pay per episode.
Okay, so Amazon does have for just for purchase, they do have a lot of the Doctor Who episodes.
They do. They have Yeah, it looks like they have all of New Who to purchase. 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah, they have everything to purchase, including some classics. But it is definitely $2.99 per episode, $1.99 per episode, or $25 for an entire season.
And that's what gets frustrating about this, because I think another part of the news, or at least some speculation around what's going on with Netflix and Hulu and losing the streaming service, is that BBC may be developing their own, you know, streaming service that they're going to start offering over here in the US. So, you know, which is fine, but that's just one more subscription that I have to get, you know. You know, I already have Netflix, I have Hulu, I actually have Amazon Prime. So to add a BBC channel to my current subscription lineup, it's going to start getting expensive to have to keep subscribing to all these different things just to get the different shows you want to watch.
Yeah, especially when there is in my instance, a single show that I'm looking to pick up. Netflix is different. There's quite a few different shows that we'll watch on that. Hulu Plus, the only reason we had it was for Doctor Who. As soon as we finished reviewing classics, I ended up canceling it, haven't renewed it at that point, was planning to jump on it here soon, and then Who disappeared. If BBC comes out with their own streaming service, it is going to be one of those instances where I'm pretty sure Doctor Who would be the only reason why I jump on the BBC player, but it's definitely not as convenient because I have an Apple TV, an older version of Apple TV. So Netflix is there, Hulu Plus is there. I'm not too sure that BBC player would be shown up there. So I might even have to upgrade my Apple TV, which isn't terrible, but definitely not needed.
Yeah, and you know, even with the upgraded Apple TV, we're not guaranteed that the app will be for that. If they make a deal with maybe Microsoft or, you know, somebody else where it's only on the Xbox or only on, you know, the PlayStation or something. So yeah, there's a lot of ifs, and
lot of uncertainty. Yeah, right now.
We're not sure exactly how it's all gonna pan out. But you know, we have high hopes. I think that in some way, Doctor Who will come back for us to be able to go back and view at our leisure. Hopefully we won't have to wait too long, but this kind of segues into, you know, some other news that's going on with Doctor Who with all this, you know, with the change of losing it from the streaming services. Now there's other change going on too. And, a lot of speculation was that Moffat was going to be leaving the show, but now it's been confirmed. He is leaving the show. He's already been replaced. But not only is that happening, but the replacement is not going to be, well, let's see, he's not coming on until season 11, right?
Right.
And then season 10 is not happening in 2016. So.
Well, I mean, it slips. Well, I guess Christmas special depends on where you consider that. If that's just a standalone or if that's the beginning of season 10 for us.
Yeah, so that's pretty big news. I mean, Moffat, I think for the most part, we've both enjoyed his run with Doctor Who. I know we've been critical here and there, but, you know, as an overall, you know, tenure with the show, I think we both enjoyed it.
Our criticism is definitely a sign of our love. I thoroughly enjoyed his run. He gave us way more highs than lows, and we love the show so much. That's why there was criticism tossed in there here and there.
So the guy that's replacing him, Chris Chibnall, he has been involved with Doctor Who before. He's written some episodes, so it's not like you know, he's a completely new face. I actually was not aware of him by name. I'm not familiar with Broadchurch as much, and I guess that's one of his shows that he is the showrunner of, right?
Right. Yep.
So I was not aware of him until this announcement. Now I am aware of him, now realizing that he had written some Doctor Who episodes. And do you have a list there of what of the episodes of Doctor Who that he has written?
Yeah. So he has written 42, which was a David Tennant episode. They're in the spaceship with Martha, crashing towards the sun. People are getting possessed by the sun. I distinctly remember this episode because it was actually kind of scary at times, with all the people going crazy by the sun. So he wrote 42 back in 2007. He's written The Hungry Earth, Cold Blood in 2010, which is our first interaction with the Silurians, the lizard people, with Matt Smith. Rory and Amy are there. Then he wrote the different shorts, The Pond Life. I don't know if you caught bits and pieces of those, where it's just following the domestic life of Amy and Rory. He's responsible for Dinosaurs on a Spaceship. Take it as you will, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. He is responsible for Dinosaurs on a Spaceship in 2012. The Power of Three in 2012, the one where there's those crazy cubes that come to Earth and everybody's wondering what they're about. I'm pretty sure we found out that they had absolutely no impact whatsoever. And then he was responsible for the PS short in 2012, where the letter shows up to Rory's father, letting them know what happened.
So I will say this. Not one of those episodes is anywhere near my favorites. I don't know. I don't know how do you feel about it, but when I hear that list, that's a lot of episodes that were forgetful. Dinosaurs on the Spaceship I actually didn't like at all. The closest one to something that I thought was entertaining was 42. That one is memorable to me, but the rest are not as memorable. So it's not like it's something where I'm thinking, oh, this is a guy that's written a lot of Doctor Who that I really enjoy. It's more, oh, this is a guy that's written a lot of Doctor Who that I don't really remember that much.
Yeah, I mean, I'm right there with you. As I was going through the list before we jumped on, it was somewhat flat to me. 42, like I mentioned, sticks out in my mind just because of the content of the episode, and it did have this creepier vibe to it. The one thing that I'm trying to convince myself of is thinking back to Moffat before Moffat started. Moffat gave us Blink, but what else was there? I can't really pinpoint my finger at anything else that would have gotten me excited about Moffat prior to or after Blink. So maybe, I mean, I'm not putting 42 on scale with Blink by any stretch of the imagination. There's something to be said that going back to those episodes on iTunes, that's one of the episodes that's available just because of how popular it is. But I don't know, maybe he has some surprises up his sleeve. Broadchurch, solid show. It's definitely entertaining. The second season, I know, struggled compared to the first season, but Broadchurch was good. Hopefully there might be more. And I know that he's also responsible for quite a bit of Torchwood.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm not going to judge this early in the game. You know, he's just based on his resume of what he's done for Doctor Who so far isn't necessarily going to, you know, be a barometer for what we can expect from him once he's actually the showrunner. Yeah, I don't have a big opinion about this guy just because I'm not that aware of him.
I know, it's practically an unknown, right? We aren't entirely sure what he has to offer. I mean, going through the episode list, okay, we might get a sense, but each of those episodes just seems so varied to me. I kind of feel like I need to go back and rewatch all of them to get a sense of who he is. I'm sure watching all of them in close proximity, we can probably come up with a little bit better picture of who he is and how he approaches the story.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Maybe that's something we can take on as a Bad Wolf Radio homework assignment. We can go back and rewatch all of his episodes specifically and maybe have a discussion about it on the show. So, well, with Moffat leaving, we get one more season with Moffat. So Moffat has actually confirmed that there's going to be 14 more episodes that he's doing, which I think will include two Christmas specials and then basically season 10.
Yes.
So we know that we're getting 14 more episodes with Moffat. I'm sure he'll write a lot of those or co-write a lot of them. So we're going to get, you know, a decent amount more of Doctor Who under his reign. You know, so we'll get our chance to get the last of Moffat's influence on Doctor Who, say our goodbyes, and prepare for the next, the next guy.
Does Moffat strike you as the type that is going to go out with a bang, or do you think he's going to do Doctor Who as usual?
I think he will go out with a bang in the way that I think that we'll get a regeneration at the end. I think, you know, and it's something else that we can talk about. There, you know, there are rumors that Capaldi will also leave when Moffitt leaves.
Yep.
Which kind of makes sense. You know, a new showrunner coming on. It's kind of what happened when Davies left. You know, Moffitt came on. He brought on Smith. We got the new companions with the Ponds. So I think we're going to get a similar thing to happen when this new guy takes over. We're probably going to get a new doctor. So Moffitt will likely give us a regeneration, you know, at the end of his run. Maybe you'll have a say in handpicking the next doctor. Maybe they'll let the new guy handpick the next doctor. Yeah, it'll be really interesting to see how it all plays out. But yeah, I think he'll go out with a bang in one way or another.
Yeah, I have a feeling that we are going to probably get a lot of interesting story elements. Series 10. I wouldn't be surprised if Moffitt kind of approached it as far as it's no longer his mess to clean up. It's no longer his ends that he needs to tie together, and just go haywire with it and leave it for the next guy to try to make sense of everything that he does in series 10.
I don't know. I am a little nervous about, just because of other things that Moffitt has done, and he does seem to be able to, or he does seem to like to kind of take the doctor in places we wouldn't expect. And I don't know. I hope his last act as the showrunner isn't some kind of crazy, you know, thing that we're not expecting, that the next guy has to kind of come in and untangle.
Yeah.
I'm sure there will be some collaboration toward the end. Chibnall will be involved maybe in some way that they kind of can collaborate. Like he might come to Moffitt with some ideas like, hey, this is what I'm thinking with the doctor and where I kind of want to go with it. So maybe you can kind of lead into that, some foreshadowing. So let's hope it's not just like okay, Moffitt, I'm done. Hand it off to the new guy. And then the new guy has to kind of figure out what he wants to do. I'm hoping there's a little bit more synergy there.
Definitely. The question is, will Moffitt give us the Sonic back before he's done?
He already has.
Has he?
Right? We got the new Sonic at the end of... it was before the Christmas special.
The Christmas special. Yeah. And the question is that the one that he gives to River?
No, because the one that River has looks completely different than that.
Does it?
Yeah.
Okay, as long as that's what you say. I've been wondering ever since I've watched it, because I never got a super clear picture.
Yeah, Rivers definitely looks different.
Okay,
so
cool.
I don't believe it's the same one. I think it is interesting though, because when they talk about River having the doctors, or you know, he had given her a Sonic, they did imply that it was his Sonic, but now it's starting to seem more like it was a Sonic. And not necessarily his, but yeah, I think it's different.
River might just be confused. She thought it was his Sonic, but he wasn't really ever that nice.
Right. Well, they were together for how many years as a knight on that planet?
25.
So who knows? Maybe he does, in that 25 years, maybe he does get a new one and hand it to her. So yeah, so a lot. I guess that. A lot's going on, a lot of change is coming, and we'll just roll with it and see what happens.
Yeah, one thing that needs to be mentioned is that in the absence, rumor has it that 2016 will not just be absent of Doctor Who. Well, it will be absent of Doctor Who, but there's also rumor of that spinoff show that we've talked about here and there filling in the gap for us.
Yeah.
The class might be filling in our need for BBC Doctor Who-ish style shows.
Do you think it'll air in the US?
I have no idea. Capaldi has already mentioned that they haven't even talked to him about it. So it's going to be totally absent of the Doctor. But it's going to take place at Coal Hill, right? So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. Maybe it's going to be one of the first shows that BBC tries with their BBC player if that goes through.
Yeah, I'm not. That to me is not going to be a replacement for Doctor Who for sure in 2016.
I don't even know if
I'm going to watch it, to be honest with you. It just, until I hear more about it and kind of what it's going to be about, But really, Doctor Who to me is mostly about the Doctor, the TARDIS, the companions. That's what I like. And it doesn't sound like any of that's going to be involved in this show. So I had a
We're
hard time.
We're not going to pivot our show for that new episode. We're no longer going to be Bad Wolf Podcast. We're going to be a Bad Wolf Class Cast.
Class Cast. Oh, man. Yeah, no, we're not going to do that. There will not be a Doctor Who podcast or a class podcast that I'm a part of. But if you want to start one, you can try to find a co-host.
Try to find a co-host.
But I don't know, like Torchwood was another one for me. I tried it. It just didn't, you know, it just didn't have the elements that drew me to Doctor Who. And, you know, it was different enough that even though there was similarities and, you know, Jack Harkness was in it and he's a big part of Doctor Who, but still it just didn't have the same feel.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like it's going to be essentially Torchwood, but with Cole's
with kill. Teenagers. Cole.
Yeah, exactly.
Which might be worse.
Yeah, it could probably be worse. I mean, it's Torchwood had a more mature feel to it. I doubt they're going to put these kids in similar situations.
Yeah. So, yeah, so we have, I think, what's the official, it's 2017, spring of 2017, is that when it's coming back?
Yeah, that's what they're saying. So we're going to get Doctor Who for the Christmas special December 25th of 2016, followed by Series 10 in spring of 2017, followed by a Christmas special in December 2017. So, yeah, we're going to have to wait a long time, have a Christmas special, wait some more, have Doctor Who, wait a long time, have a Christmas special, and then who knows what's going to happen at that point.
Yeah, I'm kind of bummed, to be honest with you. I just, overall right now with, you know, with the fact that we've lost Doctor Who, you know, on Hulu and Netflix, and now Doctor Who's not coming back until 2017, like, it's just like, oh man, like, this is kind of a punch in the gut to Doctor Who fans a little bit. You know, they're taking it away from us for a while, and maybe that just is going to increase, you know, our anticipation, and when it does come back, it'll kind of reinvigorate, you know, our love for the show. But yeah, it's going to be a long couple years to wait for this all to come back.
Yeah, and I don't know, the state of fandom, the decreased ratings, what have you, I'm hoping that this bodes well for the show, but I'm also hoping that, like, over that period of time where Doctor Who is not around, that it doesn't hinder the show. I have a hard time thinking that it will, but because US fans no longer have access to it on Netflix, and I can't tell you how many people I've talked to that are like, wow, I guess I just won't ever be able to watch Doctor Who again. We don't have it on Netflix, we don't have it on Hulu. I don't know how those in the U.S. who are watching it because of convenience will be able to watch it. I don't see them going out and buying it.
Yeah, the timing all just seems a little bad.
Yeah.
You know, with the, you know, like kind of like you were saying, with the series, the ratings were kind of starting to go down. And, you know, it almost seemed like, oh, we need to reinvigorate Doctor Who in some way. And instead of that, instead of something that maybe would bring more fans in, it's almost like as fans are starting to jump ship, it's like they just took the ship away. You know, yeah. It's like, and now it's like people that were kind of on the fence, I think, and I've talked to a lot of fans who have been kind of right on the fence, like, yeah, you know, I don't know, like Doctor Who's just kind of not where I want it to be right now. And, you know, people were kind of getting nostalgic for Tennant and Eccleston and Smith and missing those guys, and so they were going back and watching Netflix, and that's what was keeping their personal fandom alive, you know, was the ability to go back and watch the versions of the Doctor they really did enjoy, you know. And I like Capaldi just fine, but, you know, a lot of people were kind of not necessarily as on board with him, and, you know, it was kind of waiting it out, like, okay, maybe we'll get one more season, and then, you know, then we'll get a new showrunner, new Doctor, new companions, and really get excited about it. But now it's like, oh no, we have to wait 2 years to get another season with Capaldi, and then a year after that, then we'll get the new version. It's like, I don't know, people are, it is a little risky, I think, in the whole timing of it, if the show will stay popular in all of that waiting.
Yeah, I'm still having a bit of trouble wrapping my mind around it, to think that I mean, I'm used to waiting until September for a new Doctor Who season. I don't know, waiting until next spring. That's crazy. We aren't even to this spring yet. And I have to wait until the next spring. And it all came, like you said, kind of like it didn't trickle in. It was all within a short period of time that, bam, we lost Doctor Who on Netflix. Bam, Stephen Moffat is no longer going to be there. And then, bam, you're going to have to wait forever before you get to watch it again.
Well, let's not talk too negative now. Like, you know, the other thing we want to do on this episode, other than just kind of going through a lot of that news that had just happened, is do kind of a season review of season 9. You know, kind of go back, look back as the season as a whole, as opposed to, you know, episode by episode like we did. You know, kind of go back, look at it as a whole, and maybe just discuss different elements. I know we did just do a guest appearance on another podcast where we did talk kind of their version of the season 9 review. But I think we're going to do it a little bit different. So if you have already heard that episode, sure, we may repeat ourselves in some things, but I think we'll try to do it different enough that it doesn't seem like just kind of hearing the same thing over again.
Yeah.
So season 9. Let's talk about kind of the storylines that we got throughout the season. They kind of, this season, they did the whole idea, pretty much the entire season was broken down into two-parters. You know, what, out of the stories that we did see, what are your kind of thoughts on, you know, how well did it work for you as a Doctor Who fan, the type of stories that they were telling? Were you, for the most part, pretty happy with that, or was it, you know, a little lacking for you?
Yeah, I mean, I've mentioned this quite a bit before, that I've always been a huge fan of two-parters. I love two-part stories. Going back to some of the previous seasons of New Who, be it with Tennant or be it with Smith, those two-parters are really what got me excited. The way that I watched the show was on Netflix for the most part. And so being able to have that incredible story that stretched over two episodes where I could sit, I could watch one, and then I would run around getting my dinner ready and then watch the next episode. I loved those type of stories. So going into the season, when they mentioned that they were going to be doing more two-parters, I was stoked. I thought, okay, we're going to get really solid, really solid stories. Not only that, but solid stories that are long in longer form. And I have to say that although there were definitely some episode or some storylines that got me excited, for the most part, I don't really feel like it went all that well this series with the two-parters. There were definitely elements that kind of ran through the entire series as a whole. I mean, we've talked about it. There was the idea of the hybrid, how they wove that in. I really enjoyed seeing that show up in the different episodes. I was really hoping to just see it more often, more aspects. It was similar to how we kept on getting bits and pieces, pictures of Missy throughout series 8. So I really liked the idea of the hybrid. I just felt that overall the storytelling wasn't as strong as what it might have been if they would have done single episode stories, or if they were kind of taking the same story structure as they did in previous series.
Yeah, I think the two-parters, what seemed to be the trend is the first part would kind of feel a little lacking, and then the second part, in some instances, would kind of redeem it. You know, so we watched the first part, and we'd both kind of be like, eh, you know, that just wasn't that interesting of an episode. And then the second part would come around and be like, okay, it tied it together, and now we're okay with it. And I think that's kind of the downside to doing it this way. It's not like you can watch them back to back. You know, you watch it and then you have to wait an entire week to get the payoff. So for me, that structure it did feel like it weakened the season a little bit. I almost would have rather seen maybe a couple two-parters and then for the most part, like, have more standalone stories. And some of these stories, even though they were two-parters, probably could have been told in just one episode.
Yeah, I completely agree that there's some stories that it seemed like in some instances they added a lot of fluff to the episode so that they could stretch it to two episodes for the story. A lot of cliche were tossed in there so that it could stretch over. I wonder if you were to take some of those storylines and just boil them down to the essentials, the pace would have been a lot faster. But it seems like the quality would have gone up. I guess the question would we be satisfied with a 8-episode series as opposed to the 12-episode series if, hey, they shortened the stories and they didn't add anything else in there to fill in the gaps. But I look back on two-parters like The Rebel Flesh. I really loved that episode with Smith, and it feels like at the end of the first episode of that two-part arc, they give you something that's exciting. It's not a total resolution, but it intensifies the story. And then jumping into the second one, it's like, awesome, let's get to the conclusion of this. Whereas these stories, it kind of led you to this point at the end of the first episode where there wasn't like this amazing, compelling reason to continue watching other than the fact of hopefully it gets better in the second episode. It wasn't like this massive cliffhanger that made you want to watch. I mean, it looks like they tried to do it, but those elements that they kind of clung to make you want to watch were somewhat cliche, like the doctor with the blank eyes outside of the underwater research laboratory, and you're like, oh, the doctor's dead. Well, he really can't be dead. So that's not that compelling of a reason.
The biggest cliffhanger they gave us was the end of Sleep No More.
I don't think that's a cliffhanger. That's just no resolution.
There was
whatsoever.
No second part to it. I'm still waiting. I'm still hanging off that cliff. I'm still waiting for that.
There was going back to what we talked about series 10 and just the uncertainty surrounding it. I mean, we don't even have a companion yet for series 10, but one of the things that was mentioned in one of the articles I was reading was someone asked Mark Gatiss if he's going to be writing the second part of Sleep No More, because it was rumored that Moffat wants him to come back and write more of that story. It's like, oh goodness, if we don't know what's coming in series 10, but we already know that there's going to be a Sleep No More, Sleep No More conclusion or second part, I don't know if that gets me excited or if that just makes me upset that we're waiting so long for that.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's screaming for the return of the Sandman.
I don't think
that hasn't been something I've been hearing. You know, like, oh, I really hope they bring that monster back. You know, like,
right.
I feel like the only reason why you should revisit that is just to redeem it.
Yeah, I want to be proved wrong, but I have no idea how in the world you could redeem that story. There were solid aspects of that story, just the main parts of it, not really.
Well, kind of going back to the format and being told in these two-parters, I think another weakness of that is if you're given, you know, 12, 13 episodes in a season and they're all standalone, it gives you a lot more variety of story type. You know, some they're going to be traveling back in time, you know, historical stuff. Sometimes they're traveling into the future or modern day. And that's one thing I like about Doctor Who is all the different variety of the type of storytelling that it is. But when you have these two-parters, you pretty much break the season down into six parts. You know, we got six distinct stories in one season. And if one of those is kind of not your cup of tea, that's like a sixth of the season right there. You know, it's something where, you know, something like, you know, let's say the Zygon invasion. You know, that's something, you know, episode 7 and 8. Maybe it's not what you're into, you know. Maybe you don't like the Zygons. Maybe you don't like that type of storytelling. Well, you got two episodes of that you have to sit through. Whereas if it was kind of broken down into, you know, each episode being a standalone, you get the Zygon episode, and you're like, okay, got that out of the way. Let's move on to something else. So it does take away from the variety, which is another weakness.
It definitely is one of those formats that, if you win big. But right. If it falls flat, you have shot yourself in the foot with that. And I totally get what you're saying, because like you said, it takes up so much of the season, or it feels like it takes up so much of the season. It's two episodes out of 12. But yeah, it's 1/6 of Doctor Who. And I felt like, yes, there were some solid elements. And one of them I want to mention would be two arcs specifically, the Magician's Apprentice, the Witch is Familiar, and the Girl Who Died and the Woman Who Lived. But then you would hit those patches like Under the Lake or Before the Flood or the Zygon Invasion and the Zygon Inversion. And it's like you have to kind of grin and bear it through 2 weeks, two episodes. No, 3 weeks. Because you'd have the first week, the second week of that story arc, and then you'd have to wait until the next week before you found out whether or not you wanted to watch even that second arc. So yeah, if it works, it works real well. But if it doesn't, you're going to be in bad straits for a while.
So now that we've had the opportunity to kind of look back on it, we look at the season as a whole, but I know we kind of reviewed these as we went, but you're in the moment, you know, and sometimes you reflect back on something and you either like it more later on upon reflection or you like it less. So let's kind of run through those, you know, storylines and just give a quick, you know, good, bad, or neutral on these. So
awesome.
Magician's Apprentice, Witch is Familiar, that storyline. Where do you stand now?
I'm going to say those were goods.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you on that. Looking back on those, I would put those in the good category as well. Under the Lake, Before the Flood.
I am going to put them both in the bad category. They had nothing for me. To me, it was a running cliche the entire time. They tried to make it scary, and at first, those ghosts did get me to be like, oh, this could be good. And then it slowly fell apart throughout the entire episode. As soon as they stepped foot in the Faraday cage, it was like, okay, this is over for me.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you again. I think I would, you know, I'm not, when I put it in the bad category, that's just, you know, we're drawing some lines here. So I'm not going to necessarily say that I disliked those episodes overall, but just for me, they weren't some of my favorites. So I'll definitely put that in the bad. Girl Who Died, Woman Who Lived.
Both solid on my side. I absolutely love those episodes. Number one, Vikings. You can't go wrong when you toss Vikings into an episode. Number two, you have False Odin. You can't go wrong when you have a character as cheesy as him. And you could tell that he was supposed to be that way. So I'm cool with that. And then we get the introduction of what I think is probably the MVC, the most valuable character of this series of Doctor Who, Ashielder, Lady Mi. Her introduction to me is the absolute high point, the pinnacle of this series. So yeah, I would say both of those, awesome.
I'm gonna agree with you again. So I think we're learning something. Upon reflection of a season, me and you agree more than we do in the actual moment. But yeah, these actually were my favorite. This is my favorite storyline. If you lump these together as one story, I'd say Girl Who Died, Woman Who Lived, definitely my favorite out of the entire season. And kind of what I was just talking about, how I missed the variety. This is the type of storytelling I like in Doctor Who the most. I like it when they go back in time. I like the historical aspect. And this was the only time we got that in the entire season. Everything else was either modern or in the future. And so this is definitely the standout for me.
Not only is it going back in the past, but both stories, although they're in the past, they're in two different times in the past. So we get not only the variety of going back in history, but we have two different points in history, which just, it made it even more interesting for me.
All right, so Zygon Invasion, Zygon Inversion.
I don't want to say both of them are bad, because between the two, they had some really, really interesting concepts, really interesting story elements. There we go. Plus, we get Oswald back. And we have the evil Clara, which was a really interesting character. I think hindsight, I'm going to be neutral on these. I'm not going to toss them into the bad category, but they're definitely not going to be at the top of my list to rewatch.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of the Zygons as a bad guy, as a monster. I just don't like the design of the characters. I think they just look ridiculous. But the story was interesting enough. Kind of some of the things you said. We get Osgood back. We get bad Clara.
There we go. Osgood. Thank you. I called her Oswald.
Oh.
Oh, my goodness.
I thought you said Osgood. I was just hearing. I guess I was just hearing what I wanted to hear. But yeah. I think I'm going to go with you again on this one. I can't necessarily throw it into the bad, although there are elements of it that I really didn't like. Overall, as a story, it had some really good moments. I like the kind of how it ends with the boxes and the doctor's little speech there. And so I'm going to throw this one in the neutral as well.
I don't think we can – I don't know. I'd have a hard time throwing this into the bad category with getting an epic doctor speech. I feel like anytime the doctor gives an epic speech, it has some redeeming qualities to the episode.
Sleep No More. The only standalone we got.
Yeah, the only standalone we got, and also possibly the worst episode of Doctor Who in a long, long time. I cannot put this anywhere other than the bad category, and I wish there was a different category past bad that I could chuck it in. This is the never see it again category.
Yeah, you took the words out of my mouth. Never watch it again category is I put it in the same place. I did not like this. I don't think there's any redeeming qualities in this episode. There were maybe a couple like one-liners from the doctor that I chuckled at. But overall, yeah, Sleep No More. I think I'm going to stick with what I've said, I believe, a couple times now, that this is my least favorite episode of Doctor Who of all time. It's up there with, and now I'm blanking on the title, but it's up there with the story, the Tennant story with the little girl who...
Oh, yeah.
Was, like the drawings and stuff and
yeah.
Fear Her. Is that what it was called?
Yes. Yes. That's exactly what it's called.
It's right up there with Fear Her and,
Kill the Moon.
Yep. Those, if I had to name my three least favorite episodes in all of modern Doctor Who, those would be the three. And I think Sleep No More would be the least of those.
Yeah.
And it's Mark Gatiss, which it's like Mark Gatiss is one of those names. You know, you hear the names, the ones that are familiar. You know, obviously we all know Stephen Moffat can write a good episode of Doctor Who, but you always hear that name. Mark Gatiss is one that people get excited about, you know. He really let me down on that one.
I don't know. I said I won't ever watch it again. I might, but I'm going to watch it in the same spirit that I would turn on the sci-fi channel at like 2 a.m. in the morning, where you just want to watch something so ridiculous and you're sleep deprived, so you're going to laugh at it. I kind of feel like that's going to be the spirit that I watch this episode in moving forward. Real quick, because you mentioned Fear Her and Kill the Moon. Would you put this episode above or below the Sensorites when it comes to the quality of the episode?
It's hard for me to compare classic and modern. I just feel like it's such a divide. And, you know, I'm almost, you know, as I'm watching the classic series, it's historical, it's research. I'm looking at it through a different lens. So it's really hard for me to compare. Yeah, I don't know. The Sensorites was what it was, but I was expecting that from from the 1960s version of Doctor Who. So I can give it that excuse. I can't give Sleep No More that same excuse. So I don't know. I would probably rather rewatch the Sensorites episode. from the first Doctor.
I agree. Laughed
about it. We enjoyed watching that. We had one of our favorite episodes where we had an interesting guest on to talk about it and stuff. So yeah, that's when we had Bonnie Burton, right?
That was Bonnie Burton. And I almost think that the Sensorite's costumes might be better than the Sandman's costumes. Just saying.
Yeah. Ugh. So Face the Raven. We'll say Face the Raven, Heaven Sent, Hellbent. You can take it as a three-parter. In a way, Face the Raven almost stands alone. Even Heaven Sent and Hellbent kind of, have a nice break where they almost stand on their own as well. But the events that happen in those three episodes definitely all tie in. So I'd say as an overall story, those three episodes, where do you put it?
Yeah, I'm going to put it on the good side.
Yeah,
definitely. I have a hard time saying, yes, they are all tied together, but I feel like they're almost as tied together as some entire Doctor Who series where they're just all ultimately going towards the final goal, and they're probably more closely related than other episodes, but it still feels like each one can be viewed individually, and each one of them in their own right was solid. Face the Raven, Clara was no more in that episode, and it went out. I will never forget that feeling that I had sitting on the couch watching that when I saw it happen. Heaven Sent, a really interesting episode, watching everything that take place, watching it again, trying to figure out what in the world is happening there. A solid story. And then Hellbent, it's the culmination of the series. So no matter what else the series has held, the final episode seems to do it a little bit more justice. So yeah, I'm going to put those all in the good category.
Yep. I'm going to agree with you again. I think especially upon reflection, looking back on these episodes and remembering all of the things that happen and big events, kind of the shock moment of what happens to Clara in Face the Raven, the return of the Shielder, everything that went on with the Doctor, some pretty epic stuff happens. Overall, this would rival the girl who lived, or the girl who died, the woman who lived, that storyline is my favorite. This is definitely close, a close second.
Yeah, that would be a fun discussion to get into as far as quality and how it stacks up against the other one. I would be hard pressed to put one above the other, to be quite honest. That's, to me, they're equal in their quality when it comes to this series.
Yeah, and kind of looking back as we did our ratings just now and kind of looking at that, we both said beginning of the season, they gave us two solid episodes, both good. We put it in the good category.
Yeah, and then we also had that sneaky little preview they tossed in there.
Yeah, which we both enjoyed a lot as well.
Yes.
And then you get Under the Lake, and then we move on. But, kind of in the middle of the season, we get Girl Who Died and Woman Who Lived. And then at the end, we get Face the Raven, Heaven Sent, Hellbent. So it's kind of like they were at least spaced out. Our favorite parts of the season didn't all come at the beginning, didn't all come at the end. It was like beginning, middle, end, with a couple filler episodes in there that we didn't really like that much. Overall, I'd say pretty positive on the season as a whole.
with there being 12 episodes and we've given 7 of them positive, 2 of them neutral, and 2 of them and 3 of them bad, I would say that's the arrow is definitely pointing more towards the positive good season than the bad.
Yeah, and I think in my experience with Doctor Who, this is not much different than any other season that I've watched, as far as if I went back through, season 8, season 7, and did this exact same process and said good, bad, or neutral, I think I'd kind of land the same just about every season, More of them good than bad, definitely a couple stinkers in there every season, and then a handful of neutrals. So it's kind of what I've come to expect from Doctor Who.
Yeah, it's probably par for the course. Last episode though, the Husbands of Riversong.
Yes, we don't want to leave that one out.
Yeah, just where it stacks up. Maybe not for the series, but with other Christmas specials, where would you put this in the pantheon of Christmas specials?
I'm trying to remember, just kind of back through recent ones.
Husbands of Rivers. Christmas.
So Last Christmas I liked. The one before that is The Regeneration of Smith, which I did not like that much. A Town Called Christmas.
The Time of the Doctor.
Time of the Doctor. What was Town Called Christmas? Is that just... That wasn't actually a title of any episode, huh?
Yeah, that really wasn't the title. That was just
it should have been
called Christmas. I know, it should have been, right? I think that's how we've referred to it multiple times.
That one I wasn't as big of a fan of. Was it... What was before that? Snowmen?
The Snowmen.
I like that one. And then before that, is it the
Doctor,
one with
the Widow in the Wardrobe?
Did not like that one. And then the one before that was The Swimming Shark?
The Christmas Carol, yes.
Yeah, okay.
The Swimming Shark.
I did like that one. So I think we're almost every other on these.
And let's see here. After that, it was... Oh my goodness. All the way back to Russell T. Davies with... Wow, we go all the way back to him with The Next Doctor.
Yeah, so I think, yeah, if we're talking, so let's just say Smith specials on. If we're talking Moffat era, yeah, I'm almost every other on Christmas specials, with The Husbands of River Song in the positive category. I did like it.
I'm sorry, I'm still blown away that's what we're working with right now, because it is essentially every other. The Christmas Carol, solid. Doctor and the Widow in the Wardrobe, that one was rough. Time of the Doctor, I guess that's the pivot one right there, right?
That's the one I think me and you disagree on, right? Like, I'm pretty strong negative on that one.
Yeah, I'm cool with it. Yeah, Old Man Smith kind of was rough, but it was a fun story for me nonetheless. But yeah, cool. I would say that The Husbands of Riversong definitely tops Last Christmas. No, it doesn't top Last Christmas. I love Last Christmas.
Yeah, I did as well. Those, even, you know, Dream Crabs, the whole thing. I thought that the guest star on that one was what really made it. With having Nick Frost in there as Santa Claus, I think is really what made that episode. And you know, we get the return of River Song, which I think is part of what made this episode. So maybe that's the key, is to bring somebody else in that can kind of go toe to toe with the Doctor.
Yeah, that's I'm getting real nostalgic right now just looking at the Christmas episodes. I need to go back and watch the Christmas episodes, but I can't because it's not that time of year anymore.
Hey, we have 2 years of time to fill, so we're gonna have to come up with some content for Bad Wolf Radio. Maybe we do an episode
Christmas
where
in July.
Yeah, we go back, we rewatch some of the Christmas specials and talk about them. You know, we have some options coming up here.
We're gonna have to do that this July, when we're just in the doldrums of summer, which are gonna last even longer this year. We're gonna do Christmas in July and review all the Christmas episodes.
There's a lot of Modern Who that we have not talked about, because we started Bad Wolf Radio right as the 50th anniversary was coming out.
Yep.
So everything before that, you know, pretty much we didn't really, most of, you know, Eccleston, all of Eccleston, all of Tennant, and most of Smith, we haven't really talked about. So yeah. We can go back, maybe pick out some select episodes, buy them on iTunes and do some reviews as we're waiting for the long wait for Doctor Who to come back in 2017.
We'll find something. It'll be good.
So we talked kind of, you know, through the different storylines. Let's talk a little bit about some of the characters that were introduced, or either just maybe not introduced, but came back. What was some of the standout characters for you in this season?
Yeah, I mean, I've already mentioned it, but definitely going to say that Shielder, Lady Mi, was by far one of the most amazing characters I think from the entire season. She blew me away with what they did with her. Not only her character, but how Maisie Williams portrayed her. I think we all knew that with Maisie Williams coming on board, we were in store for something great. And yeah, it was. Another one just tossing out there, Missy. We didn't get too much of her, which I think is totally in her favor. Too much of Missy is probably not a good thing. But she was there for two episodes, and it was just enough. I thought that they played again. Michelle Gomez is just incredible when it comes to just being off her rocker crazy. So it worked out perfectly for me. And then with the reintroduction of Davros, that was cool to see him showing up once more in New Who. The last time we saw him was back with Donna Doctor, right? And so having him show up with Capaldi and seeing that interaction, though it had its low points, I think, it definitely was a special moment for me just to see that interaction, that character there. But I think those would be the top characters in my book. So Ashielder, Lady Me, Missy, and then Davros. I think there were some other special characters that they threw in there. I know that I was outside of the hoverboard gimmick. Colony Sarf was pretty cool. The Veil was pretty cool, chasing the Doctor around the castle. And then I know that Sam Swift holds a special place in some people's hearts with just his goofiness as he was getting ready to face the gallows. But yeah, there are some fun names to throw out there. I mean, Nardole. I mean, Christmas special. How can you get any better than Nardole as a character? But yeah, there were definitely some high points when it comes to characters that were introduced for the first time or were reoccurring.
Yeah, I definitely would agree with a number of the things you said there. I think Ashielder was the number one best addition to Doctor Who in this season. I wasn't really sure what we were going to get when they announced Maisie Williams as being in Doctor Who. I didn't know, I was familiar with her from Game of Thrones, not really from anything else. Didn't really know what to expect, but I was really happy with what they brought with that character. I like the idea of the effect that someone like her can have on the Doctor's psyche, on the Doctor's timeline. I like the timey-wiminess of it all. I like how she showed up, in one way, and then by the end of the season, she's there again. She's there at the end of time, at the end of the world. She's there with the Doctor. So I really was happy with what they did with that character. I think her popularity will probably bring her back. The more I've thought about it, and even just hearing interviews with Maisie Williams now, as she kind of talks about it, the question keeps coming up. Would you come back? Would you want to come back? I think that it's a good possibility that we see her character sometime in the future. That she was awesome addition to Doctor Who. Beyond that, I was happy to see River come back. I've always liked River as a character. I think we might have gotten the last of her in the way that the Husbands of River Song went down. It seems like they kind of were putting a nice little bow on that story. So I'm not sure we'll get her again. But I think it was a good goodbye for that character.
Yeah.
Definitely agree with what you said about Missy. Too much Missy is too much Missy. I think we got just the right amount of her in those first couple episodes. What else? I'm thinking of who else did we get that came back? Osgood, I think was
Osgood.
Good to see Osgood back.
About Rigsy?
Rigsy was a surprise for me in this season. And I think, we covered it in the episode, so I won't take too much time talking about it. But he was one that when I heard that he was coming back, I was just like, why? Why did you pick that character? Didn't really love his, Flatline. I think that's the episode he was in.
It is. Yep.
It wasn't one of my favorite episodes. Didn't necessarily like him as a character. And so when I heard he was coming back, I was a little disappointed, but it actually turned out that he, you know, he was enjoyable to watch. I think he became a more interesting character. They gave him a family, and he was, you know, he was in the episode that was the big, you know, death of Clara. So yeah, I was actually happy to see him back.
I'm gonna throw out a name, and I just want to know, because I know, so totally not a positive episode, but Rasmussen, the crazy guy from Sleep No More. Did you enjoy his character?
I actually didn't. You know, everything else in the episode aside, just that character, I didn't like. I don't really have much to say about really why I didn't like him, but just maybe because he was in that episode and that might be part of it, but just, yeah, I just didn't really like him.
Okay. Fair enough. I was hoping to catch a different response, but hey, it makes sense.
Yeah. That, not a fan. I mean, you know, we did get some cool villains. I was a little disappointed with the Fisher King.
Yeah, agreed.
Wasn't quite as intimidating as I thought he was going to be. False Odin was funny. We've talked about it before. He was just the right amount of over the top for what he was supposed to be, and it worked for me. Actually, the same idea with the husband of River Song. I'm blanking on its name now.
King Hydroflax.
You know, kind of same idea. Way over the top, but actually very entertaining for me. So, you know, those type of characters I liked. Leonis, the guy that was with a shoulder. You know, he was one of those kind of middle of the road neutral, you know, he served a purpose, but didn't really.
He roared and blew fire, right? Yeah. How different can you get?
Yeah, I kind of wish they had gone with a different character design for, you know, who her, you know, secret person that she was kind of hiding and, you know, trying to run off with other than the doctor. You know, just his costume was just a little too close to what we would expect from, you know, the, you know, Wizard of Oz production or something, you know, like it's just not.
Winnie the Lion.
Yeah. It was a little cheesy in that, but he was such a small part of the episode that it wasn't that distracting. So any other, you know, characters that stuck out to you, monsters, villains, guests? You had mentioned Sam Swift. I actually really liked that character as well. Anybody else?
I'm going through a list right now to see any that jump out to me. And I mean, there's names like Scratch, who is the guy in the Christmas special that splits open his head. Again, I wouldn't even consider him a character, to be quite honest. He really didn't do much of anything. I think that pretty much sums it up. I mean, we had Razzlon showing back up, but he even didn't have that big of a part.
So. And I think it's pretty telling that we didn't name one character that was from Under the Lake Before the Flood, like from the group that he met. Nobody stuck out enough to us. I don't even remember any of their names.
Yeah, I'm going through the list, and I know that. No, yeah, okay. So Albert Prentice is the Tivolian who shows up, which I think he would probably be the only one that sticks out in my mind. I know there was a girl that died that I felt really bad for, but I don't know her name.
Right.
I just felt bad for her.
Yeah, I just think it's kind of telling that, like, as we're going through these characters, we didn't mention anybody from that crew. And then, you know, the Sleep No More, the crew that he ends up running around with in that, I'm not remembering any of their names either.
Yeah.
You know, so kind of we get those similar type of episodes where he's on, you know, on a space station or on, you know, some sort of, you know, enclosed location that they can't get out of. And he's with these people for a couple episodes and we don't remember their names. So,
and we have to mention, like, we didn't just watch those episodes once.
No,
for those episodes, yeah. We watched it like two or three times and we can't remember who they were.
Some of them blur together for me. Yeah. I'm remembering characters' faces, and I'm like, wait, were they in Sleep No More, or were they in, you know, Under the Lake Before the Flood? You know, like, it's all kind of blurring together, because there was very similar elements to both of those stories.
Yeah, that's a good thing to point out on your part, that we didn't mention any of them.
So we're kind of left with the two major characters of the show, Doctor and Clara. I almost feel like there's more interesting things to say about Clara than there are about the Doctor right now for this season, especially for how it all ended. So I don't know which one you want to tackle first.
Ah, goodness, you picked the poison.
All right, so let's go.
I kind of feel the same with you.
Let's go with the Doctor and just kind of overall for the season, character growth. What did you, you know, how do you feel about Capaldi and the 12th Doctor this season as compared to, you know, what we've gotten from him in the past?
I totally feel like we have a different Doctor than what we had Series 8. Series 8, we got to the point where we were, we almost had enough of his snarkiness, of his at times downright cruelty to Clara, that his personality definitely seemed different. I know that Series 8 was all about trying to figure out who the Doctor was. He was trying to come to grips with who he was. Was he a good man? Did he do good things? Those types of questions. Those seem to be somewhat resolved in Series 9. And though we did have some variances in his personality from start to finish, it seemed pretty even keel. I know that we had the first episode when he is rocking out on the tank and he's just kind of he's kind of off, come to grips with the fact that he's going to die. And we were wondering if that was going to stick around. I think it did stick around to an extent. I think it had, again, its ups and downs, but it was pretty much the same Doctor we had from start to finish. I don't feel like we can necessarily say he's grown or his character has developed. And then we get to the last episode and it's kind of a reboot, right? Nothing really matters at that point. So he's kind of back to where he began.
Yeah, I think we got some interesting things with the Doctor. You had mentioned his entrance into the season. You know, you get the tank and the guitar, and you know, he's kind of having this like end of my life moment, big party, you know, which was all very interesting to see the way the Doctor reacted in that situation. You know, we've gotten different versions of the Doctor dealing with their impending death in different ways. And this was kind of a different take on it, and I really enjoyed that. We also got to see the Doctor's relationship with Clara, and you know, I've kind of always been in the camp that the Doctor doesn't really like Clara that much, you know, probably a little bit of my own personal preference, pushing that opinion, but you know, I kind of just thought, I never thought she was on the same level as someone like Rose or even someone like River. But as the season progressed and you kind of see what he went through when he thought he was going to lose her, and you know, what he went through to try to get her back, I think gave us a little bit different of a perspective on their relationship. You know, Season 8, he was kind of a jerk to her, always making fun of her. You know, there was moments of affection, but it didn't really seem, you know, that sincere. But this season, I think, really solidified that she did hold a you know, more important place with the Doctor than I was giving them credit for. So that was pretty interesting to watch. And then, like you said, the whole idea of the reboot, you know, we get this Doctor who he's willing to do things to kind of break his own code just to save his companion. You know, he's doing things like, you know, he shot and killed another Time Lord. You know, he knew the person was going to regenerate, but still, he took a life from them. You know, he did things, he's breaking rules, he's, you know, she's supposed to die, but he's kind of trying to break that rule. So, you know, we got to see the Doctor reaching points that he never would go typically. And then because of that, we get the big moment at the end where you almost get this reset where he forgets all about her. And we get the Doctor kind of coming out on the other end almost as a clean slate. So yeah, it's, I think the doctor's characterization, growth, whatever you want to call it, throughout this season was actually very interesting.
Huh. So we're kind of in different places then.
I think a little bit, yeah. Yeah, you know, when you said that you felt like it was pretty even keel, you know, I guess I'm kind of disagreeing with you on that one.
So my question there would be, did the doctor really grow, or did you grow?
And I don't even know if he grew. I think he was just becoming something that he didn't even like about himself. And I just think that something needed to change. I wasn't liking where the doctor was going. And I think the show acknowledged that, not just me as a person. I don't think they weren't writing storylines for like, oh, well, Aaron's not happy with where we're taking the doctor. Let's start over. But, I think that was not just me, but, a large portion of fans were kind of not necessarily liking this mean old doctor, you know, and some of the decisions he was making were things that were selfish or based on his companion and trying to retain her. So, yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. I think moving forward, it's going to be interesting to see series 10, when series 10 comes, depending on how much time they say has passed between what we were given as the last episode, or I guess the Christmas special, and when the series starts. It's going to be interesting, the character of the Doctor without Clara. I'm looking forward to that.
So let's talk about Clara. This will be our last point, I think, to talk about. Okay. Unless you have, you know, some random 7 questions or something you thought of. But Clara, we get a character who, you know, she was with the 12th or she was with the 11th Doctor and had built a relationship with him. And then she is one of the companions that has to go through the regeneration. She has to kind of learn this new Doctor. And kind of, it starts out pretty rough, and we get her as a character. You know, we get Danny Pink, you know, the whole thing with Danny, thinking that there might be some kind of a lasting love there, and then she loses him. What did you think about Clara in this season of Doctor Who? Were you happy with her as a character? And, you know, maybe give some thoughts about kind of her ultimate fate.
Yeah, so was I happy with her as a character? Yes. I feel like the Clara that we were given this series was the natural progression of the character that we have seen in previous series. I feel like there has been some major character development with Clara. We've watched the character change, and I feel like of all the other ways that Clara could have been fleshed out in a series, this is the most logical way that she could have been presented. This is the most natural way that she could have been presented. Throughout the entire series, she felt like she was pushing the boundary. She felt like she was viewing herself as being the same as the Doctor, to the point where the Doctor even calls her out on that at times, saying, hey, you're not me. You're basically more fragile. You're not as indestructible as I am. You can't be doing these things. I need to take care of you. I need to protect you. And she just kept on pushing it. And I feel like, although it was frustrating at times for me to see her playing that role, I didn't necessarily like her playing that role. It felt the most natural. It felt like she couldn't have been playing any other role at any other point in time when she appeared in an episode. It felt like that is what she should have been doing, based on everything that we've seen come before, based on losing Danny Pink. There we go. I mentioned Danny Pink. I feel better now. After losing him, that feels like that could have been the only character she could be. Which brought us to Face the Raven, where she died. And I felt that was, although sad, I thought that was the best possible way for her character to go out. I was so satisfied at that point in time, as dark as that might sound. But I was so satisfied to see all of that go down. And then to have her come back at Hellbent, it didn't ruin it for me, but it did break it slightly. But then say what you will about her running off in the TARDIS. The more that I've thought about that, the more time has passed. That really was a special ending. That really was a nice way to say goodbye to Clara, to have her in the diner questioning the doctor, making the statement that maybe memories become songs, and then to have her fly off. That was a good ending. I hate the thought of thinking that she's flying around in the TARDIS somewhere. That I don't like, but it was, again, good ending all the way around. So yes, high points. Her character frustrated me at times, but I don't feel like the character could have been anybody different than what the character was, and that was supposed to be frustrating at times.
Yeah, Clara is what Clara is, and she's never been one of my favorite companions. Maybe as time passes and I look back on her as a character, I might appreciate her more. But I'm kind of with you. I thought that the Face the Raven episode and the way that she died, quote-unquote died, was fitting. I thought it worked. I actually felt emotional when it happened. I felt bad for her. It was gut-wrenching, but kind of like you said, satisfying. It worked for her character, you know, kind of biting off more than she could chew, was trying to become the doctor. And, you know, I like the idea of the show showing, hey, she thought she was invincible and she wasn't, you know, and I just really liked how all that went down. And when they did, and I like that they took that leap, they took that, you know, the show had the guts, you know, to actually kill off a companion in that way. I really liked it. And then when she came back, I was a little like, wait, what's happening right now? You know, why are they bringing her back? And then as the show went on and she became a very pivotal role in the way the show ends, the season ends, you know, I was kind of disappointed by them doing that. And the idea of her running off in the TARDIS with the shoulder, you know, I did not like. I really think I would have preferred if they had brought her back in that episode and let her kind of, you know, do what she did with the doctor, but then in the end having to face, you know, face the Raven and have to go back and kind of still have that last goodbye with the doctor, but then, you know, go back into that time, into that moment and, you know, face her ultimate death. That for me would have been a much more satisfying ending, but I think they were trying to give it to us both ways. You know, they wanted to give us the emotional death of the companion, but then also the eventual return and, you know, hope that she could maybe come back someday. So maybe it's a, you know, it's purposeful that they're kind of thinking, hey, maybe in some season down the road, we want her to come back and we don't want to cut her off with a death that we won't have that option. But yeah, ultimately Clara was what she was, and I kind of was ready for her to leave, and I'm excited for a new companion and to get something that's different.
Yeah, it's she definitely had a good run. And I kind of like the idea of what you said, like if we would have gotten everything tied together and were able to see her at the end, stepping back into her time stream and knowing that it is finalized. If a shielder would have been the one to make that happen, it would have felt so much better at the end. But yeah, I can totally see them not wanting to close the door entirely and leaving it open for her to come back at some point, though I find that highly, highly unlikely. But maybe the 75th anniversary?
You never know. Unsuccessful careers can lead to many things. So She may not, you know, she may do whatever TV series she's doing and then, you know, kind of not get anything after that and be like, well, Doctor Who will always have me back.
Yeah. She will become the Doctor at some point.
Yeah. Ugh. So, yeah. So that's kind of the season. I mean, we covered a lot. We covered pretty much everything, I think. Did you have anything else that you wanted to throw in there before we wrap it up?
No, I didn't. But you made me feel guilty because I didn't have a 7 questions ready.
All right. So, yeah, I guess we're good to wrap up.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So, as usual, you can leave us a review on iTunes if you enjoy our show. And you haven't left us a review yet. We'd love for you to head over to iTunes, leave us a nice 5-star review. You can follow us on Twitter at Bad Wolf Podcast, Facebook, Bad Wolf Radio. Just search for us. You'll find us. And you can always send us an email. We would love to get an email from you. So if you want to shoot us an email, badwolfpodcast@gmail.com. And actually, we did get some emails, and I forgot that we got some emails. So maybe we'll read those on the next episode. We actually got some pretty good, interesting feedback from a listener that I think would be fun to check out. But we'll do that next episode.
Awesome.
All right. So until next time.
Later days.